Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, we continue our exit interview series with Hassan Whiteside.
We'll review Whiteside's season, look at his future role with the team. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation, allyoucanheat.com. I cover the league at large for Fansided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomillo13.
We're on our fifth installment of our exit interview series. If you haven't listened to the first four, they follow the same basic format where we talk about one player per show from the front office's perspective, review his season with some pros and cons, and then answer some key questions about his future. Today, we're looking at Hassan Whiteside. And we'll start off with some pros and cons about Whiteside's season. David, let's start with pros.
Sure.
Should we get that out of the way early?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, he is a centerpiece of the team defensively. He does enable Miami's defense to function at a certain level because he does provide some moderate rim protection.
I'm enjoying all the qualifiers.
he is certainly capable of very nice games at occasion.
I love it. That's it. Those are the pros. Look, he gave Miami a rare rim protection presence in that he is a 7-foot-tall human, and there's just not a whole lot of those relative to other sizes of humans. And so for that, that's a good thing for Hassan Whiteside. Also, there were games where he could be dominant, maybe not the triple-double with blocks kind of dominant that he was a couple years ago, but there were games, and they existed. And now they're gone. So
he did have, if I'm looking at this right, 11 of 54 games in the regular season where he scored 20 points or more.
That's pretty good.
Bad. Okay. That's, like 20% of your games out there. I mean,
and the other 80%, he was garbage. So let's go to the cons. The cons are numerous, and we've talked about them a lot on this show. I mean, this is going to be, David, if we're taking a front office perspective here, we're putting on a good face when we're telling Whiteside his pros and cons, right? We're saying, hey, look, you're a valuable 7-footer. That's a rare thing in today's game where everybody is going small, and you can be dominant at times. We just want you to do that more often. As far as cons, look, there's been attitude concerns with you, obviously, like voicing those concerns to the media and on a public platform wasn't the best way to probably go about getting what you wanted, right, as far as minutes goes and things like that. He was also not able to switch on the perimeter while defending guards as well as guys like Kelly Olynyk and Bam Adebayo. And that is a concern in today's game. I mean, there was a lot of, you give up a lot of open shots that way. And then, of course, Whiteside's season was just filled with injuries that eventually sapped him of that athleticism that made him such a dangerous interior threat who provided a little, a flavor of vertical spacing, and that just wasn't the case this season. He had those lower leg injuries, those hand injuries, the multiple hand injuries have started to take a toll a little bit on him, I think. So overall, I think, it wasn't Whiteside's best season by any stretch.
No, I think we'll never know the full extent to how much better he could have been had he been healthy. You know, it seemed like he is not the player he was a couple seasons ago. His hands in particular have, degraded as far as their ability to catch lobs, catch simple passes. There were a number of times now it could have been due to effort or it could have been due to injuries. But you did point out he lacked a certain level of explosiveness, which we've seen from him in the past. So clearly he is not at 100%, nor was he for most of the regular season. Now, you don't know, again, the difficult balance between whether or not that's related to something physically or it's something mentally, where he's just not giving 100% and he's not exactly focused. Now, as far as those attitude concerns, I think you're absolutely right. That going to the media does not help his cause any. Like, and that's something that I think you can speak to as far as a larger issue with Whiteside, just his general lack of understanding of how to do things on a very basic level. Like, do you want more playing time? And you talk about this quote from Shane Battier, I think, you know, you have to make me, he's going to play as much as he can, and he has to prove that he's not good enough to play, or something along those lines.
He has to force Spoelstra to play him more.
Right.
Like,
sorry.
In the limited minutes that he is
playing. To take him out. Right.
Yeah. You force him to take him out, because if he's playing really well, he's not going to take him out. And that was the problem with Whiteside.
It is, exactly. So there's this lack of awareness there where he doesn't know what needs to be done in order to be more effective. He thinks that this is a bygone era of basketball where you dump 40 passes to him in the low post, watch him work. Meanwhile, everybody else is running the pace significantly faster and bombing threes, and he is, you know, an aberration. He is an anachronism as far as his overall style is concerned. And defensively, there needs to be more effort. There needs to be more versatility. And you've got other players who can play that position who offer that significant at a significantly higher level. So he has to understand that if he wants to play, he's going to have to adapt or die.
Well, let's talk about that, right? So what does Whiteside need to improve on in the summer? In the spirit of an exit interview, you try to sit down with a player and give him some things to work on. And a couple obvious things that we've already touched on a bit. Get healthy, you know. Go ahead, make sure that those legs are taken care of. Go through an appropriate rehab process. Get that body back to where it was, or as close to it as you can get. Right. I think maybe even getting a little bit leaner in order to increase his mobility. Really working on that lower body strength and flexibility. Doing things like that just so that he can get around the court and up and down the court in a smoother, more fluid way. With the NBA right now is dictating that centers get up and down the court faster, and Whiteside so often is just way behind the play when there's a transition opportunity for the other team or something like that, and Miami can't be playing 4-on-5. So increases mobility, and then maybe even learn to shoot a three or two during a game. You know, we saw guys like Jonas Valanciunas average one 3-pointer per game this last season. It doesn't have to be a whole lot, but maybe just a little bit, just – again, maybe even a 3-pointer a game. Get comfortable doing that just so you can stretch the floor a little bit. Maybe turn those those ill-advised long twos into threes. I mean, if you're gonna take an ill-advised shot, at least make it worth more points in case you do make it. So those are the things that I would at least tell him to work on. What about you?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. You know, so much of the videos that we see of him working out are strength building or weights or something along those lines so that he can develop those cartoonish muscles of his, but they're not really helping. It's not like there are too many centers out there that can overpower him. So it's a matter of improving his mobility and trying to stay with him. You know, for me, one of the things that I saw all year long was flashes of playmaking ability. Mm-hmm. It's not very often, but he can pass the ball. He just doesn't. And that, you know, we saw that during the playoffs where he's forcing shots, where he wasn't playing very much. But even when he was, it was just a matter of holding onto the ball. And there were, you know, plenty of wide open shots from the perimeter or guys that were cutting. If he's not passing and if he's not willing to pass, because that's just the case, he's not really that kind of a player, then everybody else kind of, you know, just sits there and watches and the offense stagnates. And too many times we saw this team go through those long stretches where they weren't able to score, where the shot clock was winding down, where the ball just wasn't moving because it would get stuck in Whiteside's hands, and that's a problem. So, you know, would you care to guess? I looked this up, luckily. Would you care to guess what his record was when he averaged 2 or more assists per game?
What the Heat's record was when Whiteside averaged 2 assists? That probably happened maybe 8 times all season. Maybe. I'd say, I don't know, 6-2.
It was 15 times.
Oh.
Where he had 2 assists, 3 assists, or 4 assists, which was a career and season high. And the Heat's record, 13-2.
Wow. That's everything right there. I mean, in an exit interview, you would present that to Whiteside and say, look, do more of that. And you will, we win a bunch of our games, and that will force you to stay on the floor, right?
Yeah, I think he has to realize that. Look, I mean, players want to feel like they're connected, like they're part of something bigger. No one player is bigger than the rest of the team, and I think you tend to see that as a teammate of Whiteside, that he's holding onto the ball and that he's not willing to pass, and that kind of, you know, you feel less useful. Like, you don't want to go to him as often. Then you wind up not hitting each other with those perfect passes, that perfect opportunities, and again, that offense bogs down. Conversely, during those few games where he was a willing and able passer, all of a sudden the offense has a little pep in their step and they're able to connect on better shots. He's finding cutters. I remember one game in particular, I think it was against the Magic, where he just kept feeding Tyler Johnson, and I think Tyler had a career high. There were a number of plays where he was just finding Tyler as he was cutting, and that's the whole thing. You know, it makes sense. It works on every level.
This whole thing could be summed up by be a better teammate. Whether it's, you know, being able to help your teammates on the floor by switching onto guards or showing help or passing to them and you know, participating in the flow of the offense. And then if you are concerned, not taking those concerns to the media and putting us in that sort of position. Everything here could just be, in general, be a better teammate. Look, if Whiteside learns to do these things, maybe he'll be able to stay on the court more often. We're going to talk about that next after this quick break. Back with Locked On Heat, Whiteside wasn't happy with his playing time last season. That poisoned his production when he was on the court, David. Look, in the spirit of these exit interviews, we've sat down with Hassan. We've told him what the pros and cons for a season were, what we want him to work on. We show him the door, and now us in the front office, we're sitting now behind closed doors, and we're discussing really what we need to do with Whiteside. So the first question is, can we realistically carve out more minutes for Hassan while also remaining competitive? What do you think?
Well, I think it's possible. I think we just need a better version of Hassan. And unfortunately, we're never quite sure what kind of version we'll get. And so it all goes back to Whiteside and determining as a team, as a front office, a coaching staff in particular, what it is that motivates him and whether or not he's willing to make those accommodations in his game where he is, as you put before, a better teammate, where he's a much more free-flowing member of the offense rather than just an opportunistic ball hog. And that's, if you can get that better version, that more willing passing version of Whiteside, then yes, absolutely you can carve out more minutes for him if he is a better teammate, defensively and offensively.
You know, I look at where the NBA is going right now, and I don't know if we can. I think even the best version of Whiteside...
DeAndre Jordan?
Okay, yeah. Like, let's say DeAndre Jordan. How many minutes did DeAndre Jordan average last season? I mean, he was on a bad Clippers team. But
he played a bunch of games too, right? Or he missed he sat out for the first time in a long time, like throughout his whole Clippers tenure.
He averaged 31.5 minutes per game, right?
That's a lot more than Hassan Whiteside.
It is a lot more, but I also think that's a lot for a center in today's game. I just, you know, I don't know who else the Clippers are going to play in that position.
Well, he's in his, what is he? Look, that's the whole thing, though, but Whiteside hasn't played much. He doesn't have the same kind of career as DeAndre does. And DeAndre's average, well, look at this. Since the 2012 season, he played 80 games in 2010-11, 66 games in the strike-shortened season of 11-12, the lockout-shortened season, I should say, 82 the following year, 82 the following year after that, 82 the following year. It's three straight years.
He's and played more games. He's got more mileage, but he's been way more healthy than Whiteside. Right, I would prefer DeAndre Jordan's body right now than Whiteside's with all the injuries that he's had to deal with the last couple of years. And again, I just fair. DeAndre Jordan is more athletic, more mobile. And in a perfect world, if the Clippers are going to really be competitive, and I want to stress that part of the question while also remaining competitive and improving on what they did last year, I think I just don't know that a big man can play 30-plus minutes per game in today's NBA, unless that big man is completely dominant. And those are guys like, and DeAndre Jordan and Rudy Gobert, those are guys who protect the rim and are able to impact defense on a level so much more than what Whiteside can do. And I just don't see Whiteside's ceiling as being there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see him realistically being on the court for 30 minutes a game while our team still manages to win more games than we did last year. So I do think that, you know, maybe we can carve out more consistent minutes, even if it's not more minutes. I think if we can just give him a consistent 26 minutes per game, 26 to 28 minutes per game, that might be a little bit more realistic, but we need him to do all those things that you were saying. Be that guy who everybody, be that rim protector that we can funnel, you know, shooters into. Be that guy on offense who isn't a black hole, who is willing to pass, who is willing to do those little things and set screens and do things like that. Because if he does those things, now all of a sudden we're able to get a really impactful 26 to 28 minutes per game out of him.
Yeah, I mean, now here's the dichotomy, though. Now we're also asking him to be a little bit more versatile as far as, you know, particularly defensively, guarding the perimeter. Is it Does he feel like maybe he's justified in saying, well, what do you want me to do? You want me to be a better shot blocker or a better perimeter defender?
I actually agree with him on this point. I don't really necessarily want Whiteside to turn into this or to try to force him into being some switchy center. I think he is better off in a system that has him just drop back and protect the rim, which is what he did for the majority of his career. But Spoelstra understands that if the Heat are going to compete at a higher level, you can have an above average defense that way, but you just can't have an elite defense that way anymore. And if Miami wants to get better, I don't know that Whiteside is part of that. Maybe he is. I don't know. Maybe there's got to be a defense that where Whiteside is just protecting the rim at an elite level and everybody else is guarding the perimeter. And we've seen that in small doses, from the Heat. I don't know. I don't know. I wonder if the other part of this is, if we play Whiteside more minutes, what happens with those minutes to Kelly Olynyk and Bam Adebayo? Because Bam Adebayo showed nice flashes as a rookie. We want to get him on the floor more often, right, and continue his development. Olynyk, is he better as a four or a small ball five? I think a lot of people would argue he's better at a center at this point, with the way the league is going. So that's a whole other thing, is there aren't only minutes for Whiteside that we have to consider here, but also for Kelly Olynyk at the five, for Bam Adebayo at the five, not to mention those small doses of small ball with James Johnson at center or even Justice Winslow at center that we want to go to every once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I think anything that stagnates Bam Adebayo's development further is a detriment to this team, and particularly this team's future, because we do think that Adebayo as a defensive player has a lot more upside. Like, he's shown flashes, as you pointed out, but we want to see those on a consistent basis, and part of that is him getting more consistent playing time. And I think he's more ready, able to take the leap this summer than Whiteside is. And I think he just has a higher ceiling at this point. We're talking about a guy who might be more versatile and can protect the rim. That guy is Adebayo a lot more closely at this point than, I think, a lot more further along than Whiteside is, I think.
I mean, I think where this conversation is going right now is we have to explore the idea of trading Hassan Whiteside and what we'd be willing to do that for. Let's talk about that next when we come back after this break. Back with Locked On Heat now. Okay, so we've talked about Hassan Whiteside, what he can improve on, what we want him to do this summer, but we've also talked about the idea of, is it time to move on from Whiteside? Now, I think, on this show, David, we have been very open to our not wanting Whiteside on this roster, but if we're taking a front office perspective on this, we got to think about this in a way that, what would we be willing to trade Whiteside for? Now, you and I might be just down to trade him for a bag of Cool Ranch Doritos, but I don't know that Pat Riley is willing to take a bag of chips in return for Whiteside. What are we willing to move Whiteside for then? Are we looking to get a replacement center? Are we looking to maybe fill another position of need, possibly on the perimeter, like a true small forward and some length on the wing? Or are we just simply looking to get off that contract, maybe get some cap relief, or some future assets as, maybe a draft pick or so in return? What do you think?
This is a difficult question to answer because I don't know that there is any kind of clear perspective from that Heat front office. I think they still hold out hope that they'll get a better version of Whiteside. Now, there might be some internal rumbling that this past season was just absolute proof that he's never going to make that transition, that he's never going to take a leap, and that he can be outright detrimental to this team's growth by his, public issues or publicly airing his issues and not playing to a high level during the playoffs when the team needs him most. So if that's the case, then whose voice is loudest in that front office? Are there enough voices to kind of sway Pat Riley's line of thinking? Because I do think that Riley is somewhat stuck in the idea of having Hassan Whiteside be a top-notch center in this league, and I just don't know if that's because of his style of play, his style of coaching, where he grew up in an era and coached a number of teams with a top quality center, and he still thinks that that's mandatory in today's NBA, and that's unfortunate, because if that's the case, then that it shows a lack of evolution on Riley's part.
So do you think every player has a price, right? I mean, Riley has also come out and said nobody's untouchable. So do you think with Riley feeling that way about having a traditional 7-foot rim protector, that Riley's asking price for Hassan Whiteside is going to be too rich for for what the rest of the NBA would be willing to offer?
A lot higher than what we take, yeah. I think that's the case. I just don't know. Again, I'm not there in those meetings, and unfortunately, I don't know how many voices can try and change Riley's mind. And maybe there are enough where they go, you know what, we've just got to try and do whatever we can, because if not, we've got this high-priced asset in Kelly Olynyk. We've got a great young talent in Bam Adebayo. We've got to be able to see what we have from them at the center position, and it's time to move on from the Whiteside experiment.
I do think that they're going to be willing to move on. I agree with you to a certain respect with Riley about the, you know, I think he likes having a guy like Whiteside in the middle, but I also know that he doesn't like Whiteside's attitude. And at some, I do feel like maybe that he's like, you know what, I want a traditional 7-footer, but not this one. And he might look at Bam Adebayo as, you know, the next, you know, best version of that. Is he a little bit shorter than Whiteside? Yeah. Is he not necessarily the rim protector that Whiteside is? He's not at least not yet, but he could be sort of a hybrid between what the rest of the NBA is doing and what Riley wants to do, as far as he gives him a little bit of a big man presence in the middle, but he's fluid enough and agile enough to do the things that centers have to do nowadays.
Can I ask a question here?
Sure.
Where do you think Eric Spoelstra's role is in this? Like, how does he stand as far as whether or not he should be more or less responsible for Whiteside's behavior? Because I can't help but look at the buzz, and I think it's somewhat well deserved, about Brad Stevens, and at least from his ability to maximize the players that he has on that roster, you know, the quote unquote superstarless team at this point in time. And at the very least, if nothing else, he's able to understand a player's motivations and try to get the most out of them, get them to buy in. And that's something that I think Spoelstra has struggled to do, particularly when it comes with Hassan Whiteside. So it might be a Whiteside problem. It might be a Spoelstra problem who just can't seem to reach it.
There's a lot.
Should Spoelstra be on the hot seat, you think, for this?
No.
No?
I mean, you don't mean the actual hot seat.
To get the most out of a $25 million player?
The hot seat as far as losing his job?
You have to question whether or not he can do it effectively.
I look at the way he's been able to get guys like James Johnson and Deion Waiters and Goran Dragic and Justice Winslow, and you just go up and down this roster, Wayne Ellington, to buy in, to do these little things that they need to do. And he's got a track record of getting LeBron James and Dwayne Wade to buy in. I mean, Whiteside was not, I still lay the blame for the Whiteside at Pat Riley's feet, because I think that extension that he signed him to was a failure of forward looking. I think Riley got enamored with the idea of having a 7-footer in the middle, and they paid him way too much money in a summer where a lot of people were paying centers way too much money. And I don't think Spoelstra is in a situation where he has to not only deal with the naive and immature emotional Hassan Whiteside, but also try to win games with a ragtag roster. And I know that we could talk about Brad Stevens all day long, but that is by far, by no means is Boston a ragtag roster. Are they dealing with some injuries? Of course, but they've also got a number of top draft picks on that team. They've got a guy like Al Horford who is perfect for today's NBA, and his traditional 7-footer is Aaron Baines, who is basically making a mid-level contract, and you don't have to worry about getting him on the floor. I would rather have Aaron Baines than Hassan Whiteside. I would rather have Aaron Baines on that contract than Hassan Whiteside at $25 million a year, because that's the way the league is going, and I'd rather take that money and spend it elsewhere. So I'm a Spo, truther apologist. Or whatever, a Spo apologist, but I give no blame to Eric Spoelstra. None. I don't see the way in maximizing Whiteside's talents, you are not able to maximize a winning roster. That's just the way the NBA is played today.
I think it's still on Spoelstra to find whatever it is that motivates him. And maybe that's just not an easy question to ask, but maybe it's one he also hasn't. You know, he has to find a way to get Whiteside to buy in. It's his responsibility. It's nobody else's.
Or we just trade him.
Sure, which seems impossible at this point, realistically.
Well, the goal for trading Whiteside, right, would be to, I think, create some cap flexibility. Even if it's not in the long term, because that might be impossible, right? We're not going to trade Whiteside for a bunch of... We're probably not trading Whiteside for a bunch of cap relief to go sign a max free agent. But we probably could trade Whiteside for some immediate cap relief that would allow us to go out and re-sign Wayne Ellington or another player who could play a role for the team next season. I think if you could trade Whiteside, maybe shave $5-7 million off the cap sheet, that would be a win. I look at Washington as a possible destination. They're a team, a middling team that needs to take a leap, that doesn't have a lot of cap flexibility at all, and not a whole lot of ways to improve. Now, I've seen the idea of trading Whiteside for Otto Porter Jr. floated out there. That's not happening. There's no way Washington does that. I don't care how bad that front office is. I just don't see it happening. But we could call them and say, look, let's do Whiteside for Ion Mahinmi, and that would save us, you know, about $6 million, probably a little bit more than $6 million next season. Or, best-case scenario, Marcin Gortat and Jason Smith, a pair of expiring contracts that would come off the books and give us some cap flexibility for 2019. But beyond that, I don't know. I mean, would Chicago be willing to take Whiteside? Would Dallas still have any interest in Whiteside? I look at a team like the Portland Trailblazers, who do play that defense that works for Whiteside, where they ask their seven-footer to just drop back in the paint, corral guys that are driving towards the rim. Whiteside would be a really good fit in Portland for what they want to do. Yusuf Nurkic is a restricted free agent. Do they just let him go instead of spending money on Nurkic, who had an inconsistent year last season? Do you take that money and put it towards paying Hassan Whiteside for another couple of years? And, you know, maybe you're able to get off of a contract like an Evan Turner. Would we call Portland and offer Evan Turner for Whiteside straight up?
I see Mo Harkless and Myers Leonard could work for a Hassan Whiteside trade.
That would be a great deal, I think, for Miami, because now we're getting a long guy like Mo Harkless to possibly fill in at that small forward spot.
Right.
Myers Leonard, maybe not getting a whole lot out of him, but maybe a change of scenery is what he needs. He's got some stretch four potential. Could be an interesting fit next to Bam Adebayo at center, or even Kelly Olynyk at center. You can get a really stretchy front court that way. I think it works. All right, so I think we call Portland and Washington. If that doesn't work, then we go back to your original thesis, which is we just got to try to get the most out of Hassan Whiteside or fire Spoelstra.
That seems a little extreme, but at the same time, I think there's something there. Like that relationship, again, Riley's presser tends to be, somewhat contradictory from sentence to sentence, but he obviously recognizes that there's a need to repair something there. Even if he says that there was nothing to repair, then he follows that up by saying Spoelstra and Whiteside need to talk and hash this all out. So I think there needs to be some kind of, you know, understanding of what the next step is. Try to find what motivates him, get him to understand that maybe his numbers have to take a little bit of dive. Like, you can justify trying to get more numbers if you're trying to work for a contract, but he's already got his deal, so he doesn't have to worry about that. So it's a matter of trying to build the right numbers to help your team win. And if that's the case, then he needs to understand the numbers that help the most are when he is an effective rim protector, or when he's an effective playmaker.
And
I think
if we're looking on the bright side of things, chances are he's not going to deal with the injuries that he dealt with this last season. So next year should be a bounce back year for Whiteside. Now, what that looks like and how impactful that actually is a whole different thing. But I think he's going to have a better season next year than he did this last season. But that's all we have for today. That wraps it up for the Hassan Whiteside exit interview. Thank you for listening. Send us your questions and comments by emailing us at lockedonheat@gmail.com or using the hashtag AskLOHeat, and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat, where you can find out a running list of our favorite hypothetical trades for this summer. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.